Something. Something.
But I still hear it.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So if Jim whispers, you'll be able to hear it?
Good afternoon, everybody. As Senator Sobel makes her way up here, I just want to welcome everybody here. This is the delegation's first public hearing of the 2013-2014 term on issues pertaining to health and human services. I'm Jim Waldman, delegation chair. As I said earlier, we probably will have other members coming late. It's actually a habit that they learn up in Tallahassee. To get started, though, because we are going to start, I do want to let you all know we do tape these. So even though you may think you're only talking to three or four or five or eight legislators, these tapes are available to the public for what you say and will be made available, of course, to the other legislators. With that, Representative Edwards is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, Representative Rogers is going to sing the national anthem. I'm sorry. Okay. Faith, would you please call the roll? You'll hear a lot of silence in the middle of this one.
Senator Smith? Senator Sobel?
Here.
Senator Sachs? Senator Brannon? Representative Clark Reed? Representative Moraitis? Representative Thurston? Representative Rogers?
Here.
Representative Moskowitz, Representative Edwards,
here.
Representative Schwartz, Representative Gibbons, Representative Jones, Representative Pritchett, Representative Diaz, Representative Stark, Representative Trujillo, Representative Waldman,
here.
Senator Ring.
Okay. Well, we're all here. We don't need a quorum because we're not going to take any action here, so we are able to start. With that, I would like to call up Mayor Michael Ryan from the City of Sunrise to give some welcoming remarks. Mayor?
Good afternoon to this impressive body. I appreciate you coming to Sunrise. Thank you to all the members of the community who have come here to talk about their important issues. I also want to take a minute to thank you for your public service, because what you do matters. How you fight for our local communities makes a difference every day. Working to find solutions, sometimes against a tide that is difficult, paves the way for us to tackle some of the most daunting challenges locally that we face in our neighborhoods and our communities. I know that your work in Tallahassee is difficult. There are those who do not share your views of the path forward. Worse, there are those who will seek to block implementation of the smart solutions you propose and the investments in our future. Some will be honest differences of opinion. Others will be based on entrenched ideological philosophy. But we here in the local communities are on the front lines of crisis after crisis, and we need your help and your solutions. From jobs and homes to security and sanctity to education and healthcare, we deal with the issues each day in our communities. Some crises are near and some are far. Each are important, and I thank you for your vision. For instance, we know here in South Florida we have a massive storm approaching, 1 inch at a time. Sea levels over the next 50 years are projected to rise, some say as much as 2 feet over the next 50 years. There are few locations in the United States that would be as devastated as South Florida. For South Florida, this is a crisis. For the state, it is an impending economic catastrophe, which will impact every resident of the state, every business in the state, everyone in the state of Florida. The state cannot ignore the asset that South Florida has been and will be for the future. We need to work together to find solutions, and we look to you to lead that charge because you understand best the economic catastrophe that's coming. Early education efforts continue to flounder despite your best efforts. There are no better investments that we can make than in robust and well-funded public education for all students, and particularly at the earliest age. This is not just about the future of free public education, perhaps the greatest social experiment in humankind. It is about economic development and where our country will stand in the years to come in the economic strata in comparison to the world. The reduced funding to the foster grandparent program here involving Impact Broward, which I know each of you are very familiar with, is astounding and unacceptable. Dollar for dollar, there is little that can make a bigger difference than what Impact Broward and the foster grandparent program has done in our schools. We try to help locally, and we are going to try to provide transportation to foster grandparents so that that program can continue to flourish. We'll do that as a city, but we know we need more help. Florida earned yet another top ranking recently. Florida is now number 4 in premature births. The impact of preventable premature births, even by 2 to 4 weeks, is tragically a lifetime of developmental challenges and enormous societal costs. Again, Florida falls behind because the focus solely on postnatal care and shunning the smart investment in our future in prenatal care continues to cause damage. The economic costs, even if one was not to care about the human tragedy, are in the billions due to preventable preterm births, from the direct and immediate health care costs to the long-term support and the loss of economic capacity. I know you understand this. I wish others did, because we deserve to do better. There are many issues today on your agenda. Each are important to our community. And I applaud your efforts of coming here and listening, because you are our voice in Tallahassee. It is you that must have the power to persuade of the importance of these issues to our local communities for the sake of our neighborhoods, our families, and our cities. I know that each legislative session is important, and many times we say none is more important than the upcoming one, but the upcoming session is as important as any we've seen. I want to thank you, and I wish you Godspeed in your power of persuasion on these important community issues. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mayor Ryan, and I assure you that the Broward delegation agrees with what you've been saying and is working very hard up in Tallahassee to make sure that we bring back to Broward all of the things that we need to and take into account all of the concerns you've raised. So thank you for having us and hosting us. With that, I just would like to first make an announcement that there are restrooms located in the lobby for those in the audience. Members, there are restrooms off to the stage right, through the door off the stage, then to the left. With that, let's start in terms of speakers. I'd just like to make an announcement that we are now in the public hearing portion of our meeting. All speakers will be allotted 3 minutes for their presentations. As of now, we have 24 speakers. We would appreciate your cooperation in turning your cell phones off or set them on vibrate so that we will not be interrupted by phones ringing. Appreciate that. If there's anyone else in the audience who is interested in speaking to the legislative delegation and who has not previously signed up, please fill out a speaker's form and submit it to Faith Lombardo or Lisa Aronson, who are over there to my right. After each person speaks, the members of the delegation will be provided time to ask questions. With that said, we will now start with Edith Lederberg, the Executive Director of the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Broward County. Edith, you just come up here and speak to us. We appreciate it. We are going to set
a
time.
Nice you have
a seat. We are going to set a timer, but I know well enough to know that I never shut you off. So, but that being said, we kind of would like you to stay to 3 minutes if you could.
I do. I always stay to 3 minutes. Usually have a college professor up here speaking for a half hour before I start. See what happened.
Okay.
Good afternoon. It's a nice rainy day in the beautiful city of Sunrise. Our offices are here. Our issues are the same as just about everybody else in this room. Due to sequestration, we lost over $500,000 in Broward County alone for services for seniors. I see that even the state has listed us as area agencies on aging, but our most recent title is Aging and Disability Resource Center. As of November 1st, we inherited a majority of the responsibility for educating people about the HMOs that are taking over the Medicaid programs with very, very limited funding to do so. And we now are printing everything we have to say not just aging, but if we don't use the word disability, we have a problem. So if people call us, we no longer say it's the elder helpline, we say it's the helpline. So funding is a major issue for that. We have over 369,000 year-round residents of Broward County over 60, and they stay here. State has always had the attitude, bring your money, come down here, retire, and then do us a favor and die. Well, people aren't dying that quickly, thankfully. I mean, I was just 84, and I've worked with people like Eleanor Sobel for over 30 years. The issues stay, and they remain, and we have to try to take care of people, not only because it's humane, but because it's more economically sufficient for people to be able to stay within their own accustomed environments. Big issue that came up last year is local service program dollars. The head of the Senate Committee on Social Services for Senior Aging and Adults and just about everybody else, Senator Grimsley, was not aware of local service program dollars, which became a major issue in 1987 when the head of Aging and Adult Services for the state changed the formula for distributing federal dollars and called us and said, how would you like more money? I said, wait till we get more. Went ahead, changed the formula. As a result, Dade County sued the state. Instead of getting money, they won the lawsuit. We lost $825,000. St. Petersburg area lost $1.25 million. State legislature appropriated monies to cover those losses. And over the years, some other programs have been added. Dade County got all our money, and they now get over $3 million in addition to that, which is great for them, but doesn't help us much. I was appointed to a committee to write a report relative to aging programs, relative to local service program dollars. Senator Sobel sat on a committee that heard us on February 12th plea for those monies to stay in the budget. The recommendation that's being made to the legislature is that we be left alone in our respective parts of the state until our next bid cycle, and then possibly go to bid for those monies. What do we use them for? We use them for transportation to our senior centers, and there are a few projects beyond that to get money. Posnick Center gets money for kosher meals. Austin Hepburn Center in Hallandale Beach gets money to run their programs, and there are a few other programs that are vitally essential. So the report is recommending from the Department of Elder Affairs that we be left with those programs intact for now. Next time we're slated to go to bid is 6 years from now because we went this summer. So we need your support for that. Too many of the legislators don't even know what local service program dollars are. So thank you. I don't want to take up any more time. I want to go out and enjoy the sunshine.
Thank you very much, Edith. I appreciate you being here. If there are any questions, if you just let me know. No questions?
We'll...
And we'll
say something.
Yes, Senator, go ahead.
Thank you, Edith, for your dedication over the years for protecting our seniors, our disabled, and for doing a great job. And we're going to fight for those dollars to get back that $823,000 that was cut.
Thank you once again. Next, we have Dr. Paula Thackey, as I pronounce that correct, who is the Director of the Florida Department of Health in Broward County. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening. I'm the Health Officer for the Florida Department of Health in Broward County, or for the sake of brevity, DOH Broward. I would like to thank the delegation for allowing me the opportunity to provide you with an overview of the priorities of the Florida Department of Health and how those priorities are being implemented by your local health department. The first priority that I'd like to talk about is the Healthiest Weight Initiative. One of the biggest public health challenges that Florida faces is weight. Currently, only 35% of Floridians are at a healthy weight. One quarter are obese and the rest are overweight. If we follow along this trend, by 2030, almost 60% of us will be obese. According to the 2010 Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, 28% of adults in Broward County are obese, as compared to 21% in 2002. And with regard to our youth, over 10% of Broward middle school students and almost 13% of Broward high school students report a body mass index that is at the 95th percentile or above, which is an indicator of obesity. The Healthiest Weight Initiative is a public-private partnership that brings together state agencies, not-for-profit organizations, businesses, and whole communities to help adults and children live healthier lifestyles and to make the healthy choice the easy choice or the default choice. Local DOH Broward initiatives to promote the healthiest weight include leadership of the Nutrition and Fitness Task Force, implementation of the WIC breastfeeding peer counselor program, and participation in important and vital community partnerships, such as the Smart Growth Partnership and the Broward School Health Advisory Committee. By bending the projected body mass index curve by just 5% from its current trajectory, we can prevent hundreds of thousands of cases of chronic disease and really prevent that impact on people's lives, most importantly, but also save millions of dollars in healthcare costs. The second priority that I'd like to talk about is dental health. Oral health has effects beyond the mouth. Bad dentition can contribute to health conditions like heart valve infections. DOH Broward has expanded our dental services for both children and adults throughout the county, and we have partnerships with Memorial Healthcare Systems and also Broward County Schools to provide more access to dental care and dental education. I'd like to conclude with a very important issue with HIV and AIDS. According to the CDC, in 2011, Broward County had the highest rate of new HIV and AIDS infections in the entire United States, and that is not a distinction that we would like to have. The disproportionately affected groups include men who have sex with men and women of color. Fortunately, the number of deaths due to HIV and AIDS have decreased over the last decade due to testing and treatment, but we're doing a lot of work at DOH Broward to address the issue of HIV AIDS along with our community partners, making sure that we're implementing high-impact prevention that's targeted to the disproportionately affected groups. We're also addressing the co-infection with syphilis and other sexually transmitted diseases. So to conclude, I would just like to thank you for your support as we work together to make Florida the healthiest state in the nation.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it. Are there any questions for us? Senator Sobel.
This is a real difficult question, and you know what I'm going to ask you. I think you do. It's in reference to Obamacare. I know that DOH is an arm of the state, and you were given one message not to enroll people or help with enrolling in Obamacare, yet the county owns some of the facilities. And they said they gave us the green light and said, go ahead and enroll people. Could you tell me how that is functioning? You sort of have like two messages here.
Consistent with normal departmental practice, the Florida Department of Health does not allow outside organizations to access Department of Health office space and information technology systems to conduct activities. The department is treating the request for navigator space as any other organization that has sought to establish a physical presence in a county health department. And if Floridians request from us information about navigators, then we will provide them with any materials that we have. But we have not received any direct communication from the county or any direct communication from any navigators to this point.
Do you have a follow-up?
You haven't received anything from the county yet. This was all over the newspapers that they claim that it's their property and that it should be open to public access, that the claim that it was a HIPAA violation is not necessarily valid, and that it's something that you've been doing all along, enrolling people in different programs. So I'm just wondering, how important is the message? If everybody else got the message except you?
What I said is that we haven't received any direct communication from the county making any request of us or from any navigators.
Thank you. Representative Rogers?
Thank you, Doctor. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. I know you mentioned dental health.
Yes.
Can you tell me if there's any relationship with your department and NOVA?
Yes. The Florida Department of Health in Broward County is one of the providers for dental care for adults with HIV and AIDS through the Ryan White Part A program. NOVA Southeastern University is another one of the Ryan White Part A providers for dental care, and we do make referrals to NOVA through the Ryan White Part A program, and we do communicate with them and other partners with regard to collaboration on expanding access to dental care for our community. We've been able to expand our pediatric dental practices to 4 sites throughout our county. We also have a partnership with Memorial Healthcare Systems, which allows us to provide dental care for their primary care patients who are in their system, and also a partnership with Broward County Schools, where we provide dental care and dental screening through the Head Start program.
Hold on quickly.
Go ahead.
And how do you provide dental health to the Broward County Schools?
The Head Starts through a contract with Broward County Schools. The Head Start students are brought by school bus to our dental clinics, and we're actually able to provide high-quality dental screening and continuing dental care for those students who require it through that contract at no cost to the parents.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Schwartz, did you have a question?
I do, yes.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chair. And I, too, would I'd like to follow up on Senator Sobel's question, because when Obamacare formulated and they were negotiating it, the question was, how are they going to get in touch with people who need medical insurance? If they don't have it, they have medical problems and they need it. And I had thought, of course, naively at the time, because HIPAA was not first on my list of things to be concerned with, that the Department of Health knows who those people are. That in fact, you have people coming to you, and you know whether they have insurance or they're Medicaid or what their finances are, because that's what you do. And I understand the predicament you're in, apart from the state's dictates, but I just wondered, had any thought been given in discussions at lunch or at the water cooler or something, how to help people who are need medical insurance, could possibly get it through Obamacare, and you guys, they come to you, how to communicate with them to get them involved? Is there something that your place can do to kind of tap into them?
Well, I think Broward County is very fortunate to have a safety net system for primary health care through the 2 hospital districts and through the Federally Qualified Health Center. The health department itself in Broward County does not provide primary care services for adults and children. We provide services that are complementary to those that are provided by the Federally Qualified Health Centers and the hospital districts. And of course, they go through an eligibility process there and are quite aware of the insurance status of their clients. We also provide them with the primary care funding that we get through contract. So there is a safety net system within Broward County and other providers that do provide primary care for people who are income eligible and who are uninsured.
Thank you. Do you have a follow-up? No. Yeah. Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on your report on the emerging infectious diseases with respect to men and women of color. These new reported cases, what are you doing on your end to help with education and prevention?
What we've had the opportunity to do is that Broward, along with Miami-Dade, were recognized by the CDC through a funding opportunity announcement to receive increased resources for the prevention of HIV and AIDS due to the high rates that both of those communities have experienced. And through that funding opportunity announcement, we've been able to create an HIV prevention planning council. and that HIV Prevention Planning Council represents the groups that are disproportionately affected by HIV and AIDS, and ensures that the jurisdictional prevention plan targets new high-impact prevention from CDC to the disproportionately affected groups. The money that we received was intended both to build community capacity and to build public health infrastructure. We put most of that money out to contracts, to community agencies that already serve disproportionately affected groups. And so we're building their capacity to carry out high impact prevention. Some of the high impact prevention involves condom distribution, the routinizing of HIV testing through all points of entry into our healthcare system, anti-stigma campaigns, interventions for couples that are serodiscordant, meaning that one member of the couple may be positive and one may be negative. And so we're putting out that money to community agencies to work with disproportionately affected groups to carry out high impact prevention. We also have a large social marketing campaign called Broward is Greater Than AIDS to destigmatize HIV and HIV testing. And we have another campaign called Protect Yourself, Protect Your Baby, which is really trying to promote testing for HIV and syphilis in the first and third trimester of pregnancy. And when we GIS map the HIV epidemic and the syphilis epidemic in our community, we know the disproportionately affected communities, including 33311, and so we target many of those interventions and social marketing campaigns according to those maps.
Thank you. I think you got a quick question, because I think we're going to need to move on. We've got a lot of speakers.
I have one comment. Despite all the obstacles that have faced people in Florida in terms of enrolling in Obamacare, I just spoke to a reporter who told me that of all the states that had federal exchanges, Florida had the highest number of enrollees at the for the initial get-go. So there's absolutely a high demand here for health insurance in the state of Florida.
Thank you. And as we know, there are a million uninsured in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we'll have Dr. Barbara Weinstein, the President and CEO of Family Central.
I wanted to thank you all very much for what you've done in the past for Family Central, and hope that you'll continue to work with us in the future. But I'd like to take a moment of personal privilege and just introduce George Fawcett, who's in my office, who works in my office. Many of you may know him. He was a legislative aide for Representative Hudson, and we stole him. So he speaks well for the legislature. So I thank you.
Welcome.
Just to tell you a little bit about what's going on, many of you know what's happening to children in the state of Florida. Right now, in Broward County alone, as of this morning, there were over 8,000 children that we have documented that are waiting for some kind of early childhood services. All of them live 150% below the poverty level. It's irrespectful, disrespectful of our community to ensure that we have children that we know of that are not being served. We are worried about where they are and who's taking care of them, and we're asking you to take a look at some of the budgets and make sure that there's money for our children. The other number that is really frightening is that in Broward County alone, last year we had over 4,000 children that either came into the sheriff's department, through the courts, or some kind of abuse situation. We are worried about them. We are concerned. Some of them have been seriously sexually and physically abused. We need to stop this. We need to work as a community to ensure that these children are well cared for. It is a disturbing number for me that we have that many children who are documented, who have come in through the system, who are facing serious, serious life-threatening abuses. To go along with that, many of you may know that the last several years we've had some very serious issues in Broward County with the abuse line taking our phone calls. Family Central is our mandatory reporters, which means that if we suspect an abuse, we have to call it in. The serious situation has occurred many times over the last 2 years. We have brought two people down from the state to meet with us, Kim Parrish, who's no longer in charge of the hotline, and James Cheatham, who's the new director. We had four serious cases in the past several weeks that the hotline did not take. I'm asking you to please help me and someone take a look at the hotline, the services, and make sure that when someone calls the state and reports an abuse, that they take the phone call. I told the director we are not investigators, we are not police officers. We are social workers and other service providers, and we need to make sure that our phone calls are accepted. We have, the situation is so serious that we have now told our employees that if the state does not accept the call, that they are to please call the sheriff's department in whichever community they live. I am concerned about the welfare of our children. 8,000 on the welfare, on the wait list, 4,000 coming in from the court, and hundreds of children, cases that have not been taken over the last several years by the abuse line. One last number to tell you how frightening the situation is. We are the provider of low-income food to children in South Florida. Last year, we served 8 million meals. This year, we're going to serve 10 million meals to children. The numbers are not good. We're worried. We're concerned. We need your support and your help. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Weinstein. Any questions? No, then we will move on. We will move on. Dennis Haas, President and CEO of ARC Broward. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I always hate following Barbara. I'm here on behalf of individuals with developmental disabilities primarily. From a state perspective, services are funded through many different state agencies, but the primary one is the Agency for Persons with Disabilities that operates special Medicaid waiver programs. In addition, ACA has programs, Voc Rehab has programs, so it's really spread. But we talk about services for seniors, services for kids, folks with developmental disabilities run the gamut. The greatest need is pretty much in the adult population. There are fewer alternative revenue streams for these folks. And the agency has finally found itself on some equal footing from a financial standpoint after many, many years of being threatened with being eliminated or merged or having everything go into managed care. But that has been done as a result of how that's been done, although it needed to be done, but in the amount of dollars that go into individual cost plans for these folks that are lucky enough to be enrolled in this particular waiver, because there are waiting lists, have had their the amount of money they have to provide their medically necessary services drastically reduced, some by 50%. So while we've stabilized the model, it works. We don't need a new model. We don't need to redesign it again, which happens every couple of years. We just need to take a look at whether we can put some of those dollars back for those individuals and continuing to serve folks on ever-growing wait lists, like you've heard from other folks here today. But rather than go into the detail of that and have you, somebody coined the phrase, suffer from need fatigue, if you will, know that our numbers are pretty high as well. Over 3% of the population are estimated to have some developmental disability and be in need of services. And then just real quickly, there are some folks that need many of their needs met with services. At the other end of the spectrum, there are folks that need a little bit of help and that can be, then be employed and become productive citizens. And so our employment programs could be viewed as social services programs, as they typically are, and baked into the mix of everything we're talking about today. Or I would challenge you all to think about them differently. And when you are talking about Enterprise Florida and bringing business to this state and paying to keep business in this state, remember that many of us here today, I think probably Family Central, Henderson, and we alone probably employ close to 1,500 people in Broward County, just in terms of our own staff, that we are part of the economic engine, part of the job story. And at ARC Broward, I've left you with a description of the types of services I'm describing, but also a little bit of an out-of-the-box commercial for our culinary school and catering business, which manages the Grand Ballroom adjacent to this space as well. It is a jobs program that helps to self-generate dollars for services, doesn't do it 100%, but we are adding jobs to the community why doesn't Enterprise Florida, why doesn't that thinking include us, would be a question. And my last comment would be to thank all of you for your huge support over the years. And Representative Edwards, I just saw your turkey order come in, so thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you. Any questions? Senator Sobel.
But, you know, I seem to focus on this area. Could you tell us if the computer program, where people donate their computers and the students work on them, is that still in operation, and how is it going?
Okay. Another mission-based enterprise that we operate is our electronics recycling program. It's about 12 years old, although it's a little bit twisted up in the breakup of the county waste system. But the growth of that has taken it recently to a 25,000 square foot facility over by the Fort Lauderdale Airport, and it is doing business in 8 states. Grown from local businesses that have here, that have businesses in other states, and it is a job training program. So we are taking students that are still in school, in after school programs, they're interning. We have young adults that are learning light industrial types of skills, and they are working in that business. It is generating dollars to pay for staff, and it's a wonderful model that is working. It's hard, it's tough business, but it is working well without really any support from any human services support other than the staff that supports getting our students there and supervising them during their training period. So
thank you
for asking.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Next, we're going to have Jim Moyer from the Salvation Army of Broward County Adult Rehabilitation Center. Are you here? Okay, we're going to move on then to Linda Ballow with the Alzheimer's Association of Southeast Florida Chapter.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the delegation. As most of you know, dementia is a general term for a decline in mental ability severe enough to interfere with daily life. And Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia. This past April, it was identified as the most expensive disease in the United States. So I'm happy to see you, but unfortunately I'm back because there is still no cure, there is no effective means of prevention, and no effective means of treatment. Someone develops Alzheimer's every 68 seconds. So by the time I finish speaking, at least 2 more Americans will have been diagnosed. And with our large elder population, echoing Edith's words, here in South Florida, it's particularly troublesome to know that 1 in 3 seniors dies with Alzheimer's disease. It can be a comorbidity or another dementia. And presently, there are 450,000 Florida residents, including an estimated 40,000 in Broward County, who are living with Alzheimer's or a related disorder. So our mission is to change the trajectory of this devastating and debilitating disease. But last year, the Purple Ribbon Task Force was charged with developing a state plan to make Florida more dementia capable and to begin to address the challenges that are posed by Alzheimer's to our families and our communities. And the task force results of their findings was submitted and became effective on August 1st as a state plan. So I want to thank you all for your support. Today I'm asking you to continue to support the implementation of these recommendations so that we may live in a dementia-capable state. Now we will be working, the Alzheimer's Association, with Representative Matt Hudson and Senator Garrett Richter this session, and Natalie Kelly, who some of you know, is working with them right now on legislation that includes many of the recommendations from the task force. And some of these are creating an Office of Alzheimer's Disease or Related Dementias under the Executive Office of the Governor that will work with all the departments that have Alzheimer's programs. And that would include departments like Children and Families, Department of Law Enforcement, Department of Health, and many more. Developing a well-coordinated and dementia-capable emergency management system specifically to address the needs of people with dementia during a disaster such as a hurricane, training law enforcement, and you're very familiar, I'm sure, with Silver Alert. Anybody who's been on the highway sees the 347. Those are our people who get lost in their cars, but we would like to expand that to those lost on foot because 60% of people with Alzheimer's do wander. So I have given you printouts there with some more of the recommendations, and I just want to thank you for all your support, and also remind you and everyone here that we have a helpline that's free of charge. It operates 365 days a year, 24/7, and we offer care consultation and recommendations for services and other resources.
Thank you.
So good to see you all.
Thank you. Representative Edwards has a question.
Thank you. For those constituents with families, mostly seniors, who contact our offices, and I hear similar stories, you know, mom is getting older up in age, she's 80, she has Alzheimer's. You know, Edith gives us these great resources and guides, but above and beyond just having a caretaker with that loved one there at the home to make sure they can take care of themselves, they don't wander or stray away, what else can these families be doing? What other resources are out there to help them or their loved ones?
Once again, I really have to recommend they call our helpline because the care consultants are master level clinicians who have all this information, and they do it on a case-by-case basis where they can help. But, you know, feel free to contact me or our helpline anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schwartz.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm looking at your letter of the recommendations, and I found one that I'm a little surprised at, which is to standardize the training for law enforcement officers. I would have thought that was, I really thought that happened already. Am I wrong?
Well, I do recall, I've been with the association 5 years now, and when I came in, we had law enforcement training. It was with a grant for our organization, and then we lost the grant money, and I think that there's still a lot of need, so that's what we have to get to, yeah. There are trainings, but it's not, I don't believe it's statewide, but I can find out more about that for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Dave Wallace from United Way of Broward County, you're next.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and delegates. Pleasure to be here. Faith is passing out our 2014 legislative agenda. It was just approved by our board of directors this morning, so hot off the presses. I believe I'm preaching to the choir here when we talk to you about Medicaid expansion and expansion of access to health care, so I'm not going to really address that. I would like to say something for Representative Moraitis, even though he's not here. I know it is being taped, but I have the utmost respect for Representative Moraitis, and I would really urge him, and I will do that in person, to encourage the House leadership to develop a bipartisan plan that will bring down those Medicaid dollars. If they can't come up with a plan, at least they can adopt the Senate's bipartisan plan, because so many Floridians are dependent on those Medicaid dollars to get access to health care in the state of Florida. The one thing I would like to call attention to is on page 5, and it's on behavioral health funding and accessibility. And we're asking the Florida legislature to increase funding for behavioral health services and provide full access to mental health and substance abuse treatment and prevention services for all Floridians. As you may know, Florida unfortunately ranks 49th among states in annual per capita funding for mental health services. And without the appropriate levels of care, individuals with mental illnesses and substance abuse issues will experience poor health outcomes, dying on an average of 25 years earlier than their healthy peers, and a greater likelihood of involvement with other more costly systems of care. Florida has also been the epicenter for the prescription drug abuse epidemic, killing more than 7 people every week across the state at the height of the epidemic 3 years ago. And also the Florida legislature last year in the 2012-2013 appropriations reduced DCF behavioral health funding by $12 million. So we're asking that there be an increase in funding for behavioral health services across the state, and we're also asking that the legislature amend the Florida statutes to remove funding restrictions for the prescription drug monitoring program. Right now, responsible prescription drug or pharmaceutical companies are not allowed to support that program, and we think they should be allowed to do so. We know that statistics show us that 20% of individuals who need behavioral health care but are unable to get it will become involved in the criminal justice system. The cost of intensive community mental health treatment is $20 per person per year, while the cost of a prison bed is $60,000 per person per year. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Any questions? Representative Edwards.
Sorry, I'll be brief. I just want to encourage United Way to support our good bill, House Bill 99. A lot of it, too, is making sure, like you said, that we can divert individuals with substance abuse problems to get the treatment that they need, and, of course, save dollars that you mentioned that we can use and put back into mental health funding. On page 5, you mentioned your proposed changes, but I'd love to get together with you and talk more specifically nuts and bolts and how we can actually make sure that individuals, particularly adolescents in schools that have mental health illnesses, that we provide counselors, therapists, people there on site, above and beyond the teachers, that can make sure that we get those kids help, identify the problems they have, and make sure they get treatment.
That would be great. We'll help. Well, happy to do that.
Thank Representative you. Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And United Way is a national organization. Many of our people coming today do have national impact. And I wondered, having recently read on the behavioral health issue that the president has thought of trying to think of ways to increase funding for behavioral health and mental health with as a way around of having some helping with the gun problem.
Right.
So I just wondered, in the way of helping them out, in that coming to us and asking for state money, which is fine too, I wondered if you knew if there are any initiatives nationally that United Way may be doing to kind of move this along and give some good ideas to. I mean, I don't have any ideas. If you have any, it would be great.
Right. Well, as part of United Way, as part of the United Way of Broward, we have our Commission on Substance Abuse, and the Commission on Substance Abuse actually administers the Burn JAG grants for the county for substance abuse prevention and treatment programs. So we are involved. We also were involved with bringing down those federal dollars as part of the 2008. What is it? That money they brought down from the
stimulus.
Yeah, for the economy, whatever that was.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Starr.
Yeah, hi, thanks for coming before us today.
Thanks.
I just want to know, is the United Way doing anything to promote the changes in the way healthcare is going to be put out in 2014 with mental health parity and coverages in the new Affordable Care Act compliant policy?
We're monitoring that with our Public Policy Advisory Committee. We have members that sit on that committee that are directly involved in that. 211 Broward, the Behavioral Health Planning Council. So we have a number of entities that are there that are directly responsible for that, that sit on our committee. I would like to add that our Public Policy Advisory Committee and the legislative agenda, it represents the work of about 30 community stakeholders. So it's not just Broward, United Way of Broward County's issues, but this is a community-led and developed agenda. So it represents the interests of a lot of different stakeholders in the county.
Thank you. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you?
Good.
Do you think it's a public policy issue for us to advocate to abolish smoking in prisons?
Oh, that's a good question. That I don't know.
Okay, I guess I'll ask the Cancer Society when they come.
Yeah, that's probably their
quite
issue.
Costly.
Yeah, quite costly, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. I want to assure you, though, that everybody up here is for expanding access to health care.
I know they are.
So we'll all talk to Representative Moraitis, too, as well as our colleagues on the other side of the aisle in the House.
And I want to thank everybody for your hard work on that. I know that was a difficult issue the last session, and especially Senator Sobel being on the Senate Select Committee. So thank you very much for your work on that.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Dr. Stephen Ronick from the Henderson Behavioral Health Center.
Hi, everybody. Representative Waldman, appreciate and the whole delegation the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm going to go off script just for 1 second just to respond to Representative Schwartz's question from a minute ago, if there's anything that could be done on a federal level relative to behavioral health care. We know where our state is relative to state funding, so maybe what you were thinking is the answer needs to come from a more federal level because we're limited here in Florida for a lot of reasons we'll go through in a second. I'm going to talk fast today because I know I'll have a short period of time. On a federal level, there's proposed legislation called the Excellence in Mental Health Care Act, which if that act passes, that'll be the most historic and important act passed relative to mental health funding since President Kennedy in 1963 established a community mental health center system. One thing that I think the delegation should be aware of, on a federal level, we have parity now in terms of health insurance for mental health, substance abuse, and physical health disorders. We do not have parity for reimbursement. The Excellence in Mental Health Care Act would fix that by designating behavioral health centers that meet very rigid criteria as federally qualified behavioral health care centers, similar to what we have now for FQHCs, which are federally qualified health care centers. FQHCs get the prospective enhanced Medicaid reimbursement. Mental health centers around the nation do not. They're reimbursed in a different, lesser way for mental health services, so there is discrimination relative to reimbursement. If the Excellence in Mental Health Care Act comes to law, it would, in an epic, dramatic way, change capacity around the nation in terms of access. Senator Stabenow in Michigan is our leader. We have co-sponsors in the Senate and the House. Actually, it's a bipartisan issue. Senator Rubio is a co-sponsor, which is fantastic. I met with Representative Congressman Deutsch about a month ago in D.C. He has now signed on as a co-sponsor and has become a great national leader to our cause. So I just wanted to address that. If you have any more questions about it, I'll certainly answer it. But let me, if I can just go through what I wanted to say quickly, because I know there's a lot. What I wanted to do today is just very, very quickly talk to you about the state of funding and the budget for behavioral health care in the state of Florida. What the budget reductions have done, what the problems are that have resulted as because of that, and what we should do about it. Basically, in 2012, 2013, and I want to make sure you guys hear this, $30 million was cut from the statewide mental health budget. $30 million. $12.2 million in a general statewide budget reduction, which Mr. Wallace referenced right before me, and then $17 million was taken out of the system to fund the managing entities. That money came directly out of state services. If you add it up together, it's almost $30 million. If you give me one more second, I'm just going to race through a couple things. I would appreciate it. In terms of strengthening the system, the reason why is 1 in 5 adults experience a mental health problem at any given time. Currently, DCF is only meeting 34% of the adult funding need and 27% of the children's need. Florida's 49th of 50 states in per capita spending. We know that. In terms of funding, we've gone with generations now without any substantial investment in the publicly financed system. In terms of how we fund the system, community care and institutional care, and I think this is important for people to understand, 56% of Florida state mental health agency spending is on community care, and 42% is done on state hospitals. Nationally, 70% is spent on community care, and about 30% is spent on state hospitals. We spend the money in the wrong places. A lot of it is spent in jail care, as you know. We're 49th in spending on mental health, 35th in substance abuse, 43rd in the per capita spending on Medicaid beneficiaries. We spend very, very little money on Medicaid. And of course, now we're not going to have the Medicaid expansion. It's not looking very good. That would have solved the access problem for over 1 million Floridians in just a dramatic way. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here in a big way. I'm going to skip through a lot of my other issues. The only thing I just want to talk about is I left you the packet of what would solve the problem. We have a very detailed package. This package we gave you came from a meeting that the Florida Council for Community Mental Health actually had with the governor about a month ago, 2 months ago. They sat down with the governor. We gave him this. I thought you should see specifically what we outlined and what we think would solve the problems. I'll just leave it at that. If you have any questions, I can handle those.
Representative Rogers has a question.
Of course.
So I'm going to go to her. And
thank you. Your meeting with the governor, did you get any commitment from the governor?
Yeah, I wasn't at the, three people from our trade association was at the meeting. The feedback that we got, and we got some detailed feedback, he was very supportive. He said he wants to do more. He wanted to see the data. The governor has not been he's been a reasonable supporter of behavioral health care. With that said, we had wished that he had been much stronger relative to his advocacy for the Medicaid expansion. We know he did support it. Personally, we wished he would have done more in terms of using his bully pulpit to get out there and scream at people about that.
We're very much in agreement.
I mean, even if you don't care about people, it's just a fantastic business deal for the state of Florida.
Okay, could you keep us? Hold up, Mr. Chair.
You know what? Pull your microphone down so everybody else out there can hear you.
They're having problems hearing me.
So the governor was, again, we need three, we need the House, the Senate, and the governor to be on board, and that's the tricky part, and that's what happened with Medicaid expansion, of course.
Representative Rogers, you have a follow-up?
Yes, excuse me, Representative
okay.
Rogers.
No, I was going to ask you about the rankings that you have here in the various area and the reimbursement rate. That is something that we need to watch, Ms.
I mean, one thing to keep in mind
what
is...
What can we do?
Yeah, the state rates for the safety net provided mental health services in the state of Florida have not went up since 1995. Okay. It's just, kind of crazy making to think that organizations could continue to make things work at those rates. And that's one of the reasons we talked about a request for additional funding in certain cost centers that speak specifically to people's salaries, because people don't make enough money in the industry. Case managers and social workers, we lose them left and right in community mental health centers across the state to organizations like the Veterans Administration. The VA will pay a starting social worker, $70,000 a year, and that's what they should get. They should get more. Okay, and then in behavioral health systems, based on the reimbursement rates, the salaries are just not there. It's been since 1995 the rates have not went up in terms of our reimbursement.
Thank you. Representative Edwards?
The prisons are doing pretty well,
yeah.
I would say, by your report. I wish all the public had access to this. This is one of the best reports I've seen. I wish I had this last week. We spent about 5 hours listening to the public as we debated self-defense laws, in particular,
right.
Whether repeal stands your ground. And I pointed out in that our focus needs to be on this and realizing we're the minority party where we're at with certain laws that we know we don't
right.
have the votes to change. But a lot of the root problems of things that we don't like that we see in the media relate back to exactly what you presented here. So I appreciate the work that you've done.
Thank you.
And a lot of us have talked about this privately since the meeting, and we are fully committed as members from Broward and as Democrats to making this a big priority issue this year, because we don't want
we
to see more tragedies
that.
On TV.
Yeah, we're really proud of our delegation.
Thank you.
Representative Schwartz, you had a comment?
Yeah.
Or a question?
I actually have two. One is, it's a comment that I was amazed that you said parity does not include parity with dollars.
That's correct.
That's what I thought parity
That's correct.
Meant.
Well, it matters in terms of insurance companies, set their own rates. And private insurance companies now are going to have to step up to the plate and not have different copays and different schemes to keep people from getting mental health and substance abuse treatment. But in terms of Medicaid recipients and a federally qualified system, there's a huge difference. FQHCs, and they should get it, and it's fantastic. We don't want to take anything away from them. Our FQHC in Broward County is fantastic. They get paid a prospective Medicaid reimbursement rate, which allows them to treat a lot more people who don't have health insurance. The mental health centers don't get reimbursed like the FQHCs. If the Excellence in Mental Health Care Act becomes law, that will change things. It's not that anyone would be able to become a federally qualified behavioral health care center. You'd have to meet a million pieces of criteria. You'd have to be state-of-the-art. You'd have to be accredited. You'd have to provide evidence-based services. Organizations like Henderson would meet those. Not all would, but the good ones would, and there's plenty of good ones. And that would change capacity in a dramatic way. So I'm certainly spending a lot of my focus on that right now.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. You said something that also puzzled me. In the cut that you said about $30 million.
Right, last year.
The $17 million you said went to the managing entities.
That all over the state, right.
Right, and I understand that that's a slippery place, but managing entities.
I'm on the board of our managing entities. I'm not criticizing the managing entities.
I mean,
it's not a criticism of the managing entities were not funded with new dollars. The money came directly out of service dollars. That we have a huge issue with, and I think was terrible social policy.
So what's terrible, though? Because it's going to, you mean that the money that would have gone to you will go to a managing entity?
The managing entity is administration.
I need you to just wait till she finishes, because we can only get one of you at a time.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't ask for...
You're always recognized.
Pardon me.
It's just that the money, I understand it's like an HMO in that it's a managing, there are administrative costs that will be chopped off. But the money going to managing entities are supposed to go to you guys.
Take Broward County, for example. There's about $44 million available to fund the publicly funded mental health system. The managing entity, and I think we do, and they do a good job at contracting out to provide those services. My point is that to create these new companies, the managing entities are nonprofit entities, new corporations, for the infrastructure, for the staff, for the managing entities, which contract with us for services, we took $17 million out of direct services across the state to create these seven managing entities. That, I think, was a big mistake. You know, if the state doesn't want to contract directly with us and wants to give a third-party contracting authority, that's great and probably could be really innovative, but don't take the money from directly out of service dollars in a system that's already catastrophically and embarrassingly underfunded. That's my point.
Move it into administrative course.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you. We're gonna need to move on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for being here. Maureen Mann or Barbara Effman? I didn't see Barbara. But, American Cancer Society. Is there anybody here?
Wow.
All right. We'll come back. We'll go then next. Cynthia Buchholz with the Mental Health Advocacy. I know she's here. She was one of the first ones here. Welcome.
Thank you. I think this is just, before our time, I think it's great our country that we can stand before our legislators and air our viewpoints. Don't y'all think so?
Thank you.
Let's have a cheer. Okay, great. My name is Cynthia Buchholz. I participate in the 2010 statewide mental health teleconference. I participate over 2 years in Broward County Baker Act Task Force team. I took the Baker Act training course online provided by NAMI and USF, and I've engaged in over 3 years of research on Baker Act. I think my research is probably the most extensive amongst anybody. Under certain circumstances, a criminal enjoys more rights than a non-mentally ill, law-abiding citizen. This is a consequence of wrongful and inappropriate Baker Act detainments by police on non-mentally individuals. The ramifications to the poor victim are extreme. Not only does the person have to be embarrassed by being taken to a mental health ER, they have to be exposed to severely mentally ill people that aren't professional, and there's an incident report sitting at PD. I was surprised yesterday when I called up several local hospitals, including Carlton Mills at Broward General, and he did not know there was an incident report. So in other words, if you're not mentally ill and somebody calls in police about you and you get two incompetent officers, those who are too scared, don't know what to do, or abusive, you will be whisked away, no questions asked. That incident report will be erroneous, and the stigma cannot be expunged because it is a civil infraction, does not have a court case number. Remember, this is not ex parte. This incident report is open to the public and background checks. It impedes employment, weapons license, join the military, and certain volunteer work, including religious ministry volunteer work. Hello. Now, the criminal, depending on the nature of the circumstances, can get his or her arrest record expunged and can go on a job interview, fill an application, and put no for arrest. But our poor victim here, who has no mental disease, doesn't want to kill himself, is not a danger to anybody, doesn't have that same luxury. Okay, the ramifications of unlawful Baker Acts is huge. In fact, Imperial Point yesterday told me that 30% of the people needed to be there. But I would generate at least 25%. And a prior statewide research that I did showed that some places had as many as 60% did not need to be there. I'm sorry to say, unlike the Louis Departey reporting data center, I'm talking fast because of the time period, everybody in Florida does not want to kill themselves and does not need in-house mental health care. I am hereby asking the legislature to pass a bill to allow any person wrongfully detained under this law to bring a notarized, to be allowed to bring a notarized copy with a doctor's signature of their medical records for the event to PD. And in such records do not show the person to be dangerous to self and others, does not show the person to be incompetent, does not show the person had any treatment while they were there, shows the person was at the city a short period of time, probably triage, to have that incident report, make it an exception, removed, expunged. It is disgusting to ruin a person's life over a couple of minutes or a couple of hours to get triage and that be stigmatized. No person should be detained without justification, without a premise, without probable cause, then have stigma of life or nothing, and have no legal remedy. I would also like to add, I'm going over time because it's too important. The BA 52 form that police used to initiate a Baker Act, I'm going to paraphrase for time. I, the officer, consider Joe Schmo to be mentally ill as defined by statutes. Doesn't give the definition. And due to this impairment, person is either a danger to self, can't take care of themselves, too incompetent to know they need to go to a hospital. The word because needs to be put there. It should say, I, officer, whoever, think person is mentally ill because. Because needs to be put there. I'm sorry. The circumstance on bottom are nothing but sketchy and maybe a rewrite of the chronology. Okay, in closing, you have my packets with all the detail, and I'm asking the legislature to please pass a bill so that people can go on with their life and not have a stigma of absolutely nothing. I'm going to quote the last sentence of the article on Christina Cobb that each legislature had. This is a direct quote. To opine that a person is crazy without validation is both an moral and social injustice. I hope everybody in here agrees on this. Can we please pass a bill? It's time to stop the abuse. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody
thank
got any questions? Because my research is extensive. I have been wanting to bring my documents over to somebody. I'd like to see them. I have a pile of documents and case studies, including Supreme Court hearings and in-state, out-of-state. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Chief. You had a question.
Representative Jones?
Yes. Somebody had a question?
Yeah, I was waiting for the chair to recognize me. Thank you. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to, I know I just looked at your bill. I would suggest that you speak with Representative Campbell. She filed House Bill 9 last session that dealt with Baker Act. So that's Representative Daphne Campbell, and she probably engaged in a conversation.
Okay, because what I did do was I emailed everybody that was on any kind of committee from Senate and legislature that had anything to do with health or civil injustice, whatever, because this is way overdue.
Representative Campbell.
But this abuse, this affects countless of Floridians every year, countless. When a hospital tells me that 30% don't need to be there, in other words, at 60%, I think we have a little problem here.
We're going to have to move on.
Okay, thank you very much.
We appreciate you coming. Thank you so much. Virginia Jacko, President and CEO of Miami Lighthouse for the Blind. Are you here?
Yes.
Yes, see you there. She is.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Waldman, and members of the Broward delegation. First, thank you for the 3 years of funding for the Florida Department of Health, for the contract that the Miami Lighthouse Florida Hike and Children's Vision Program has had. It is up for renewal. And let me tell you the outcome here in Broward County. So looking at the contract period of last 12 months, July 1 through June 30th, we received under contract from the school system here in Broward Schools 1,200 referrals of children who failed the state-mandated vision screening that was done in the school, were on the free and reduced lunch program, and were identified as having no form of insurance, no kid care, no Medicaid. We go through that. We check to make sure that they qualify. If they do not qualify, we refer them to their community optometrist. Approximately 800 children did qualify, and they received a comprehensive eye exam, which included dilation. And nearly 700 of those children required and received at no cost prescription glasses. And what is interesting is that the Health Foundation of South Florida surveyed 1,400 parents. And the question was, did your child improve academically because of the services provided by the Florida Hike and Vision Program? That is the